And so, you know, I'll start off by saying that's still in the works, Jason. This is what we're where we're at so far. And if we have the time and ability to get to a fully interactive matrix, we will get there. But an additional piece of that then becomes, is the software that we're using for resource planning able to incorporate interactions based on penetration levels of different resources for resource planning purposes? Because the ELCC is an input into our Encompass model. The Strat-based model SERVM doesn't take in ELCC, it's a fully stochastic model. And so what I can say right now is that Encompass is not able to handle that interactive effect. I actually put together a mixed integer based solution that would allow for the ability to for it to model ELCC as a combination of various resources. And we've given that to the developers, and they're trying to work that into a new edition, but the current version of the software would not allow us to incorporate that even if we had that data. Nick, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I mean, I think it's a good question. I mean, I think, you know, you start seeing these solar values decline. So I think that's going to probably decline no matter kind of what the mix is here. I tend to agree with Nick. It really depends on the time, because you really can't run every combination. You can't run every combination on the sun. You really try to kind of create some bookends and get some intuition from some of these matrices, because you really just can't run every combination. But I think to the extent we can run some sensitivities off of this base matrix, that would give us some better insight into maybe what those relationships might look like. I mean, generally, when you add lots and lots of solar, you may see an increase in battery, is generally what we've seen in the industry, a little bit of that value in the battery. But I almost think we're at the point where we've got so much solar, based on the previous slide, that we've pushed that risk into a pretty narrow bandwidth already. I'm not sure we're going to see a lot more interaction than what we already have. But I think to the extent we could put some bookends sensitivities on the back of this, it might be helpful. It's a good question.
And I think that's, I'm going to go back to the last slide here, and as I appreciate that, Nick, and as I mentioned, I wanted to make sure to touch on some of the interactiveness between this and the energy efficiency bundles, mainly because, you know, as you start to see the value of capacity of certain resources degrade, another way to think about it is, so for example, when we're out here, say if we've got 1,000 megawatts of battery on the system and the incremental value after that is only 46% on an ELCC basis, you would need to install 2 megawatts of battery to cover 1 megawatt of peak load, approximately, if I'm thinking about that correct, Nick, and you can correct me if I'm, Nick Wintermantel, you can correct me if I'm wrong. And so that's when you start to think to yourself, well, further out in the forecast period, when some of these capacity values, these ELCC values, really start to erode, that some of that higher cost energy efficiency, which you might not think of being cost effective, may become cost effective. And so that's one of the thought processes on wanting to move energy efficiency to the supply side is you may end up seeing situations based on some of this information that lead to additional opportunities for demand side management resources. Nick, do you have anything to add? It looks like Pat O'Connell has chatted in a question, but before I move to that, I guess I'm going to see if you have anything else, Nick.
No, that's all I have for today.
Okay. I'm sorry?
Hey, this is Nick Schlag. I was just going to offer a quick comment.
Sure, Nick, please.
Yeah, so Nick Schlag with E3 here. I think just a general observation is just on the nature of all of these curves as declining ELCC curves. And just want to kind of emphasize that what this points to is just generally the notion that planning an electricity system that relies on really high penetrations of solar and wind and storage altogether, you know, it presents an increasingly sort of difficult challenge from a reliability perspective. So we see this as a really sort of interesting but kind of challenging aspect of this IRP process, is kind of making all these puzzle pieces fit together farther and farther out in time as the system transitions to higher reliance on these resources. So the question about interactive effects, I think that's also a pretty interesting one. and definitely one worth thinking about, but just generally the idea that reliability is a really important thing to plan around here, and capturing all of these declining curves correctly is kind of essential to making the process work well.
And Nick Schlag, and I know now we're getting really confusing with the Knicks, right? So Nick Schlag, I know that you and E3 have done a lot of ELCC and reliability analysis around the country, along with Nick Wintermantle and Estrape have done it. In fact, I'd go so far as to say, you know, you are the two leading firms in doing a lot of that analysis, especially as it relates to deep decarbonization. If I recall correctly, you and others at E3 had participated on a demand response ELCC study for the CAISO. And Nick Wintermantle, I know that you've looked at this all across the country. Maybe both of you could offer a little bit of your experience and knowledge gained in doing this, not just for us here in New Mexico, but across the country. Just to put you on the spot.
Yeah, maybe I'll just continue and elaborate a little bit more on my initial comments here. We have done a lot of work kind of close to this in other parts of the country and seen basically these same sorts of curves emerge basically everywhere else that we've done this work, namely that, you know, eventually you get to a point where solar provides you almost no marginal value, and then batteries, while they start really high on the curve, you know, they also show some amount of degradation. What it ultimately points to is the need at some point to have a firm resource for reliability needs that can truly kind of support or prop up the rest of the system once those two other curves, the renewables curves and the storage curves, have kind of really fully come down. There's really no substitute for a resource that can be called on any time that it's needed and that can produce sustained amount of energy over long periods of time, whether that be hours or even days or weeks. So that firm resource we see as being really the keystone to making a system work as you get up to the 80, 90, 100% or parts of the curve.
Yeah, Nick, this is Nick Wintermantle. I would agree with everything that Nick Schlag just said. I mean, if we go back to the previous slide just one more time, just I think this graph kind of says it all. I mean, as we add more and more storage to this, for this plot, we're gonna flatten out the curve. Let's just say it's 4 hour storage though, so we're gonna be able to manage and flatten out this curve. Eventually you're gonna add so much that you've got this really flat curve that says, hey, a 4 hour battery is not gonna take care of me anymore. I'm gonna have lots more of my 24 hours be at risk where I may have generator outages or so forth. You really need to add a pure capacity resource that could be called any time of day. So that's what we're dealing with. But if you look at the matrix we've created, I mean, we've gone up to 1,500 megawatts of storage. Think about the PNM system being 2,000, 2,500 megawatts of load. So that's a substantial penetration, and we're still seeing value even out that far. But it does. It brings into the question of, well, I can't really do this all with 4 hour storage. I need to be looking at longer duration, whether it's 6 hour, 8 hour type of pump storage or conventional generation that we can dispatch. It's pretty fascinating topic, really, when you think about the reliability and how we've changed the system compared to where we were 10, 15 years ago.
Thank you both, Nick Schlag and Nick Wintermantle. While you both are here, there's a couple of questions that were chatted in from Pat O'Connell, I think, that may want to get your thoughts on as well. And it may be something we have to come back and address at the next meeting after we look at one of the documents that he's referencing in his question here. But the question is, will PNM examine how the system needs change if PNMBA flips between exporting to importing electricity during the day as predicted in a document referenced the Western Flexibility Assessment Final Report? And as a sensitivity, how will PNM assess interaction with the wholesale power market in general? I'll start off by saying, you know, part of what we're attempting to do, as we talked about earlier, is we're seeing if we can model some market interaction within the Encompass model. And then, of course, we know that the way that, that the servant model is set up is it allows for additional interaction, and so that model always would be looking at, depending on loads and resources, you know, imports versus exports on an hourly and intra-hourly basis. I do think, though, and this is where I'd like some comments from Nick and Nick as well, you know, what we're seeing is a depletion of the capacity and energy just broadly in the West. We know that, you know, just a week ago when the blackouts were occurring in California, we were unable to access anything in the real-time market. California, of course, saw some rolling blackouts. And so when we're looking at what we think is prudent planning in terms of ability to import, you know, that's something that we're still assessing. And we don't think that, you know, leaving a gaping hole in our portfolio and hoping that power is available on the open market is prudent planning. So I'm interpreting your question to mean more on an energy basis for economics and not a reliability basis, as prudent planning would not say we leave a large hole open for non-firm imports. Nick and Nick, do you have any thoughts or comments?
Well, this is Nick Schlock with E3. I think Pat's question is really interesting just in terms of what it kind of alludes to in terms of the changing flows and transmission interchange between different regions as the Western system evolves. To Nick Phillips's point, I think there's an important distinction to be made here with respect to just general energy versus capacity needs. The way that we kind of imagine things or see things playing out is that the whole West, we see kind of moving into this regime where during the day, you know, there's a pretty large supply of abundant energy on the wholesale market because everybody's producing lots of solar. And so during the day, there's lots of energy out there, potentially at low costs, zero cost, or even negative prices at some times. So anybody who's in a position to buy and has access to the wholesale markets, you know, can definitely probably take advantage of those. That said, that's very different from sort of the question of how does a utility meet its own peak needs, which, as we've seen here, but also we see this in other places, are going to end up being, you know, in the evening as the sun is going down, you know, in the sort of later hours of the day. And that's kind of the time of day where we imagine a lot of that supply in the market actually beginning to dry up as utilities are kind of, as the sun's going down and utilities need their own resources to serve their own loads. And as Nick alluded to up front in this workshop, you know, I think we don't quite know the full story of what's happened in California with the recent blackout events, but I think at the same time, we can just kind of acknowledge that, you know, in many respects, this is probably the confluence of kind of that sort of gut curve dynamic coming to fruition, and the fact that, you know, a lot of supply has become pretty constrained in those evening hours when capacity needs tend to become binding.
And Nick Winterman, if you have any comments, jump in as well. And I guess I would also point out, I think we see that, you know, again in the slides from PACE when they showed us the they showed us the expected prices going forward, and we do have hourly prices that underlie those curves that were in PACE's forecast, and seeing the zero and even negative prices in some of the shoulder months as the solar was at full output. And, you know, we're only able to take advantage of that in terms of the economy purchases if we don't have solar exceeding our loads as well. So that's an important piece to remember. And then when that solar ramps down, we're going to be facing those same, you know, high price periods during that duck ramp curve to try to serve load if we're taking from the market, or we need to have resources internally in order to meet that ramp. Nick Wintermail, do you have any thoughts or comments?
No, I mean, I think you guys both covered it. I mean, I think it is going to be critical for you guys to come up with what is a reasonable assumption to expect on peak for future. I mean, we can look at historical data, and we've actually done that in previous filings, I think, and saw the data. It could be a couple hundred megawatts, but in the future, as this build out occurs, we retire more fossil fuels, we're adding more energy limited resources. But I think we just need to be cognizant of what we assume in those during those hours 19 and 21 that we really can get from the market. I mean, I do think California was surprised. Heat wave across the entire West made it a situation where they weren't getting probably the imports they expected they would be able to get. So that would be my biggest concern around that interaction question. I feel like the energy prices are going to be exactly what Nick Slog said. You know, have very soft prices in the day. You know, we're going to be looking for power in the evening with higher pricing. So.
Thanks, Nick. And I think you hit another topic on the head is that, you know, just looking back at what our ability to achieve in the market historically is not necessarily the best predictor going forward, given the dramatic and rapid involvement of the overall system in the West as renewable mandates increase, carbon emission standards increase, and then the system dynamics are ultimately going to change. And, you know, we saw the liquid real-time markets here in the last week. The day-ahead markets weren't great either. Very hard to get anything firm supply when people are expecting things to be that tight. Again, looking at what we think would be a reasonable assumption for imports based on reliability is a question that we still need to consider. But, you know, prudent planning would be conservative. Make sure you conserve your load and don't count on non-firm. If you're going to count on something long-term, try to contract for it, ensure it's part of your portfolio, not just hoping it's going to be there in the day ahead of real-time market. So Nick, thank you for that extended discussion. I do appreciate that. I'm getting a note now that Andrew, Nick Schlag's colleague at E3, is going to have to leave. Andrew, thank you for attending, and we appreciate your help with this, and we'll continue to work with you going forward. So I think now, Nick Wintermantle, again, thank you as well. We'll see what the folks say in terms of whether they would like us to do a deeper dive on the ELCC, PRM, LOLE question, all those acronyms that we love here in the electric industry. And, you know, we'll see what they say. But if there's no other questions for Nick Wintermantle and Estrape and Chase's Nick's colleague, we'll let them go and we'll move on to the last few slides of this presentation and hopefully finish up here in the next 15, 20 minutes.
Okay, thanks, Nick. Yeah, Strappe will drop off. So appreciate the time today.
Thank you.